The Jazz Loft radio series is funded in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts.
There were roughly 1,740 reels of tape recorded in the Jazz Loft. This is reel number 14, dated January 29, 1960. There are plenty of stories and characters revealed by all those many, many tapes recorded in the loft in the 50s and 60s. And then there are the tapes themselves, the ones that may not tell such a specific story, but they may capture something else. Like the energy in this jam session with Dave McKenna on piano, Eddie DeHaas bass, Ron Free drums. You may not feel quite that same energy in a studio recording, or even a live recording. Jam sessions were the way of things at the Loft, and they sound like what they are. Not a performance, not a rehearsal, more like musicians thinking out loud, figuring each other out, exploring the possibilities. These loft tapes give us hundreds of hours of these things to listen to. That's Zoot Sims joining in. Zoot's name and his work come up again and again in the tapes. He was a loyal regular in the place. W. Eugene Smith, the master photographer who lived in the loft, photographed the life there and made these tapes, knew what he was doing. Though we're not completely sure what that was. He thought maybe he'd do a project someday, maybe a book, he said, about life in the loft. In the meantime, he was gathering material.
All over the world, man, a musician is respected. You can work with different gigs.
Still, New York City is the only place, man,
they pay the highest wages there, but man, the cost of living is high.
I'm not talking about money, man. I forget to talk about money. I'm talking about playing music.
Making it, being respected as a human being.
I don't care about being respected. I would love to have respect. Yeah.
Some people knew they were being taped. Most didn't care or even notice. It was long before reality TV, and Cinema Verite was still very young. But some artists were paying very close attention to reality then. Whether Smith had art in mind or not, he was paying attention too.
You just gotta, like, do what you really gotta do, what you really dig doing. If
you
make bread or you don't.
The thing is, it really pays off.
You're goddamn right it does. You don't get ulcers.
How do you mean it pays off? You mean doing what you want to do?
You're damn
pays
right
off
it does.
Inside, yeah, I know what you mean.
You look at every cat that you work with, man, and they're shaking, they're nervous, they're hostile.
Sometimes you can feel how lonely it was in the loft. It's the middle of the night, and the tape is just rolling. It's almost as if Smith felt a little less alone if he was recording something, even if it was nothing. But most of the time, somebody would turn up after not too long, playing something somewhere, though that could sound lonely too. And things in the jazz loft always picked up sooner or later. You get the feeling of the relative ease of certain things about the life there, at least sometimes. One of the hallmarks of creative work, and even life in general in this post-war period, was spontaneity. That can mean a lot of things, but maybe some of what it means is the way some seemingly tentative noodling on the piano could turn into a jam session, if the right people happened to be listening and then joined in. It's Hall Overton on piano, feeling his way along, with Fred Greenwell sax and Ron Freed drumming. Along those lines, Smith's tapes recorded many a spontaneous meeting of musical minds. On Reel 131, Jimmy Stevenson, a bass player who lived at the loft, is returning home after a gig. He finds none other than Zoot Sims hanging out in Stevenson's apartment.
My name is Jimmy Stevenson.
Jimmy Zoot.
Hey, Zoot. How are you? I'll be back to you. I mean, that's the only personal contact I've had.
Yeah,
other than your records.
How are you doing, Jimmy?
Okay.
Do you have the correct time?
I don't know, it's about 3:30.
Where are you going for?
Cool.
What time do we come here tonight? 11:30, right?
Yeah, 11:30.
After 10 minutes.
Well, let's blow one.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's time.
On Reel 121, Roland Kirk, the versatile verbal musician, later known as Rassan Roland Kirk, he said he heard that name in a dream, is caught by Smith's tape recorder dreaming about being a musical entrepreneur someday with his own club.
It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of work if you buy a house. But I hope the man says when I get 50 years old, I don't want to be walking around paying rent to somebody else, man, and not having nothing of my own.
Yeah.
And that's the way I feel about this kind of thing, man. When I get 40, 50 years old, I don't want to be working for nobody else, man. But myself, you know.
Hey, Roland, I'll let you, if you want to get this joint, I'll let you have a copy of my book for nothing.
I remember. Okay, listen to me, buddy.
No, you know, I wrote a booklet called How to Operate a Jazz Club on a Low Budget.
Oh, I know how to do that.
Roland Kirk's playing at the loft was captured on the tapes, too. Kirk, who was blind from an early age, died in 1977 of a stroke at 41. At times, when the noise got really loud, late at night, there might be a visit from the local cop, checking up on Smith and his jazz colony, which was really an illegal living space in a distinctly non-residential neighborhood, and wired for sound, no less.
What have you got the tape recorder going for?
Doing a book on the building, which is taken inside and outside.
What do you got this thing running for?
Well, because my cat was chasing a mouse. And I was recording the cat chasing the mouse.
What happened?
The goddamn mouse got away.
Holy Christ, how much electrical stuff you got here?
Well?
Jesus, look at all this. What are they, all speakers? One, two, three, four.
Five.
Four. Holy Jesus.
There are two more over there. And then down below,
But somehow, the investigations never amounted to much. Smith kept taping. Thelonious Monk tunes were a feature of the loft. It was, after all, the 50s, and Monk was rising fast, on his way to becoming a Time magazine cover icon. And not just the tunes, but Monk himself was captured by the tapes. He spent a couple of weeks that we now know about rehearsing at the loft with one of its most illustrious inhabitants, Hall Overton, who collaborated with him on arrangements for Monk's famous 1959 concert.
And then some other instrument on soul, huh?
You can come back, you know, like you were in prison. The trombone come on again, has it?
Monk walked around in circles. That is well documented by the tapes. You can't always hear exactly what Monk is saying, but the feet are unmistakable.
Four choruses.
If it makes sense, you know. He's telling my story, you know. Say how? If you can hold the interest, you know, and everybody enjoying themselves, you know.
Tape 212. Zoot Sims returns. Bill Potts piano. Ronnie Free drums. March 1960, as far as we know. If you're wondering why Zoot Sims keeps coming back, it's mostly because he's so good. Musicians use one word about the way he played, and the word is natural. Zoot, born John Haley Sims in 1925, never had a lesson, and, his fans insist, never played a clumsy or ineffective phrase. He died in 1985. He comes alive in these tapes. Just a sampling of the Jazz Loft tapes, recorded by photographer W. Eugene Smith in the golden years for New York jazz, 1957 to 1965. There are roughly 3,999 hours and 45 minutes more. This is the Jazz Loft radio series. In the next episode, Hall Overton. More about that loft resident, a beloved teacher and pianist who inspired a whole generation of musicians, including Steve Reich, Teddy Charles, and Dick Katz.
He didn't act like a classical guy who's down with jazz. He acted like a jazz cat. He acted like one of the fellas, which he was.
That's coming up in episode 4. Thanks to Sam Stevenson and to the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke. For WNYC's Jazz Loft radio series, I'm Sarah Fishko.
This series was funded in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts.